Section 3. Achieving Political Equality. Citizens in higher quality democracies benefit economically from legislative decisions, ensuring that the gains from growth are widely broadcast. They see an America superficially much like their own countries, but burdened with a system of decriminalized political bribery that permits powerful economic interests to readily prey on most citizens. Political equality is poor, with one political party even aggressively disenfranchising voters. Voter sovereignty is weak. This profile of America highlights the tenuous nature of high-quality democracy, Piketty's endless inegalitarian spiral always lurking. Ending Piketty's spiral by improving wages, job security, and the like hinges on raising the quality of American democracy. Political practices responsible for a higher quality of democracy abroad start with the decriminalization of vote buying. While necessary, that step alone is insufficient. Higher quality democracies also feature electoral characteristics that empower political equality, particularly multiple member legislative districts, runoff voting for national leaders, mandatory voting, as in Australia, and proportional representation in legislatures, what political scientists term single-vote transferable electoral vote systems. The various electoral policies and practices utilized abroad to corral economic elites and sustain political equality begin this section. Chapter 10. Other Wealthy Democracies Corral Oligarchs. Britain's parties should be funded entirely by the state. Financial Times editorial, February 2015. Our politicians hire American electoral advisors as though Washington and Westminster were comparable polities. When they arrive, they see they cannot buy television advertising, or raise serious sums of money, or treat the election as a two-party race, and they quietly recede. Junnan Gunnish, Financial Times, April 2015. In comparison to the U.S., the U.K. has what appears to be a tough set of controls on campaign spending. Jacob Rowbottom, The New Republic, 2011. As we have seen in earlier chapters, the American election system is a stark outlier among wealthy democracies. Nearly all other wealthy democracies tightly proscribe campaign contributions and independent political spending to prevent political inequality, the distortion of public opinion, and corrupted lawmakers. Another goal is to prevent American-style polarization caused by negative advertising. The particulars vary, but nearly all mimic Germany and the United Kingdom in preventing pay-to-play by sharply capping electioneering campaign spending. With far less scope for electioneering spending than in America, candidates and political parties have far less legitimate need for donations. Moreover, peer nations also subsidize candidates and small donors to further free political parties and candidates from reliance on large donors. These higher quality democracies also restrict political TV and radio advertising opportunities, with those limited opportunities usually provided free or inexpensively. Campaigns are limited to a few months in duration as well. In addition, corporations and entities that are independent of candidates and political parties, similar to Warren Buffett or the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, are prohibited or strictly circumscribed from contributing to or purchasing political speech during elections on behalf of politicians or policies. Thus, American-style negative advertising on TV and elsewhere is absent, with the glaring exception everywhere of social media. Taken together, this policy array in higher quality democracies affords candidates abundant communication resources while maximizing political equality and individual free speech rights. Any person can speak freely for as long as they choose on any street corner or soapbox on nearly any subject. The fittest in other wealthy democracies cannot outshout neighbors. There are tight limits on electioneering spending by parties or candidates in higher quality democracies. For instance, the nationwide campaign spending by German Chancellor Angela Merkel in 2013 was $27 million. It was even lower in France in 2012 and 2017. Other tight limits apply to citizen donations and independent spending. Voters in other wealthy democracies are comfortable with such tight caps. They would be shocked if opaque, powerful groups could spend unlimited amounts of money for years to mold public opinion and influence election outcomes, or if individuals such as Sheldon Adelson or Paul Singer were allowed to speak with the voice of tens of millions. Pay-to-play is rejected because peer nations strive mightily to guarantee political equality and voter sovereignty, while nurturing a consensus-driven political middle by supporting electoral and representational integrity. They covet these desiderata as pillars of a prosperous democracy, rather than as the niceties or novelties they are to the American eye. Indeed, peer nations are so determined to avoid vote-buying that even the Financial Times, Britain's equivalent of the Wall Street Journal, rather remarkably demanded in a 2015 editorial that private contributions be entirely abolished, with British politics funded solely by taxpayers. If the political class at Westminster is to have any chance of winning back public trust, it needs to end the suspicion that the culture of political donations is corruptible. The only way to do this is a system of taxpayer funding. It's ironic that Britain, the abhorred example of political corruption for colonial Americans, has come to hew far more closely than America to both the political equality proclaimed by the Declaration of Independence and the original intent of the Founding Fathers and the Framers to excise all political corruption, defined most broadly. The success of Britain and other wealthy nations in corralling Aristotle's oligarchs and crafting high-quality democracies is a consequence of 2 centuries of revolution, debate, and contemplation. It has taken almost that long to devise their refined political systems, which maximize and equilibrate individual political freedom, rendering voters sovereign. Precluding vote-buying by strictly limiting the need for donations has emerged as the time-tested technique to ensure that citizens are equally heard and equally heeded by lawmakers. Some go further, but actually impose de jure limits on the amount of donations by individuals and independent entities, while others, such as Britain, don't bother. It makes no practical difference because the operational key preventing pay-to-play is national caps on electioneering spending. Candidates or their parties cannot legally spend many tens of millions of dollars, American style, to win political office. Australia is the only wealthy democracy other than the United States to allow unlimited political donations and independent third-party political spending, including by corporations. The similarities end there, however, because Australian pay-to-play is on a tiny scale. The 10 biggest donor corporations, for instance, contributed a total of US $3 million during the 2016 general election there, a rounding error in American pay-to-play. The other Anglo-Saxon nations, Canada, New Zealand, and Britain, follow the high-quality democracies of Europe in severely limiting overall electioneering spending, de facto or de jure tightly capping campaign donations and independent spending while prohibiting corporate donations. Genuine free speech. We saw earlier that Roberts Republicans conflate the First Amendment guarantee of speech content with speech volume or amount. They do so by treating money as having the same validity as speech, thereby enabling the fittest to insist that limits on their political contributions and independent spending amount to censorship of constitutionally protected free speech. Their self-serving claims would be jeered at in nearly all other democracies. Limits on the donor class in wealthy democracies such as Canada are not considered censorship, because the caps serve to maximize speech equality and thus maximize individual speech rights. In other wealthy democracies, the right of individual citizens to say their piece as often as possible is a political foundation. The German versions of Charles Koch can opine endlessly on street corners and elsewhere, but they cannot rent a sound truck or purchase TV spots to drown out their neighbors' opinions. As of this writing, however, the fittest 50 can purchase unlimited exposure on social media, a deficiency discussed later. How well does this formulation abroad maximize individual speech rights? Well, the conservative Freedom House's iconic Freedom in the World Index grants these peers the same perfect scores awarded the United States under all three of its free speech categories: freedom, political rights, and civil liberties. Political systems in other wealthy democracies. As noted, limits on electioneering spending in nearly all peer nations are set sufficiently low to obviate the need for large donations. Tobias Düring and Christoph Kerkmann, writing in the Düsseldorf-based Handelsblatt, described the feverish final weeks in the 2013 German elections this way. The election campaign is in the final sprint. Billboards, online advertising, and a lot of pens. More than 70 nations further reduced the need for private campaign donations by providing candidates with public funding to defray electioneering costs. The goal is to avail citizens of a factual, full airing of genuine policy differences between candidates and between political parties. The outcome is robust and highly competitive elections, where the weight of ideas and policy prescriptions are determinant rather than weight of wallet. European nations provide candidates and their political parties an average of about $5 per voter in public funding, with the greatest level at $15 in Norway. Such subsidies represent about 40% of spending by candidates and political parties over an election cycle. In France, for instance, public subsidies equal 47.5% of permitted electioneering spending. The balance of campaign funding is derived from small donations, typically incentivized by tax credits, as in Canada, France, and Germany. Political parties in Germany, garnering 0.5% of votes for Bundestag federal candidates, receive €1, $1.10, for each of their first 4 million votes, and 83 cents per vote received thereafter, with an upper cap on tax credits granted for individual and total donations. Combining a limited need for campaign donations with public funding has successfully freed lawmakers from reliance on wealthy contributors. The proof is voter sovereignty. Policy outcomes of other wealthy democracies do not reflect an American-style income bias. Cynics argue that political bribery is so profitable that money inevitably leaches into politics regardless of rules. But that assertion is belied by evidence in peer nations of the efficacy of their comprehensive monitoring and their aggressive enforcement of spending rules. Indeed, exposés of dubious campaign finance practices routinely cause electoral blowback. Voters in these nations harshly punish parties or candidates who appear implicated in vote buying. For instance, disgusted Germans voted out the entire Free Democratic Party, FDP, parliamentary delegation, following a donation exposé in 2013. The FDP had opened a tax loophole after receiving a €1 million contribution from August von Finck, the billionaire owner of the Mövenpick hotel empire. Here are specifics from the UK, Canada, and Northern European electoral systems. United Kingdom. Total electioneering spending per campaign in the United Kingdom is capped by law at about $150 million. That includes spending by parliamentary candidates, which is capped at £39,400, about $50,000 apiece, plus a 9 pence, 11 cents, per voter bonus. A separate nationwide cap of £19.5 million, $24 million, exists for each major political party over the year, concluding on election day. Quite remarkably, these caps have remained in that neighborhood, in inflation-adjusted terms, for 135 years, since political spending was first limited by the 1883 reforms to end vote buying. You heard that date correctly. Electioneering spending since then has been capped at about one-half the cost of the 1880 campaign, with no evident deterioration in British democracy. These limits, of course, are a tiny fraction of U.S. spending. The amount spent in the last English national campaign roughly equals the political spending during the 2014 midterm election in the state of Georgia. And more was spent by candidates Obama and Romney raising money in 2012 than was spent in total by the two major British political parties. In further dramatic contrast with the United States, where candidates rush to reserve popular TV times and digital access, candidates in England rush to reserve, well, scarce billboards. Political advertising is restricted to leaflets, canvassing, billboards, and social media, supplemented with free but limited TV time and one free mass mailing to every residence. Like nearly every other wealthy democracy, political spending by independent entities, including donations, advertising, or issue advocacy, is limited. The specific UK cap on such independent spending per entity nationwide, such as Warren Buffett or Charles Koch, is £988,000, $1,200,000, during the entire one-year period concluding with Election Day. New York Times journalist Stephen Castle explains the impact of this system. In a country where television election spots are banned, billboards are booked long before voting day, and other strict laws constrain election spending. That task proved so hard that the UKIP party says it is unlikely to use all the money before Britons go to the polls. Campaigning in Britain remains local, with candidates pounding the streets, knocking on doors, issuing leaflets, and sending mail. Even these expenditures have to be recorded in minute detail and submitted to the election authorities. Spending limits also apply to organizations like charities or unions that want to campaign ahead of elections. Like Canada and its richer European neighbors, Britain finances elections with a blend of state subsidies allocated on a per capita basis, supplemented with private donations that are tightly capped by law at small amounts. This array of regulations devised since 1883 prevent the British fittest from influencing elections, with the exception of press barons like Rupert Murdoch, as noted later. Even so, the United Kingdom's electoral system shares two features with America that reduce the quality of its democracy. Parliamentarians represent single-member districts, giving rise to both millions of wasted votes and gerrymandering. Single-member districts mean all voters for the loser are unrepresented in the legislature, unlike outcomes in proportional representation systems, discussed later, that are common in higher-quality democracies. Proportional systems also prevent gerrymandering. Canada. Like Britain, Canada caps donations for national elections, including parliamentary contests. A few provinces, such as British Columbia, do permit large donations to candidates seeking provincial or local offices. In contrast, donation limits for such contests in other provinces, Alberta, Manitoba, Nova Scotia, Ontario, and Quebec, are much tighter than national limits. Electioneering spending is also limited in Canada to reduce the need for private campaign donations. For candidates in the general election in October 2015, for instance, the caps on electioneering spending varied by population in each riding electoral district, but averaged slightly over $200,000 Canadian, $150,000, for individual federal parliamentary candidates. The cap was $55 million Canadian, $43 million, for each of the leading political parties, or in the neighborhood of $250 million Canadian combined for all parties. The entirety of political advertising on television is limited to about 10 hours during the 2 to 3 months of campaigning, with some airtime provided free. Political TV ads purchased by independent third parties are permitted but severely limited in number. Consequently, Canadians are subject to a fraction of the number of 30-second political spots that Americans see. Their nationwide total is equivalent to what viewers in some U.S. media markets experience over a weekend in election season. Such caps are prevalent across continental Europe as well, In Germany, for instance, Chancellor Merkel's campaign sponsored a total of 140 TV ads in 2013, compared to 100,000 by President Obama in 2012, just in Ohio. Note that these electioneering spending caps are ceilings. Actual Canadian outlays traditionally are lower because amounts hinge on the good graces of small donors. That means amounts spent by individual candidates and parties in elections vary a great deal, depending on their popularity, although major party candidates tend to achieve a rough spending parity. Like other higher-quality democracies, Canada provides public funding to ensure that all candidates who qualify for the ballot have adequate communications opportunity. The subsidies can total as much as one-half of all permitted spending by political parties, and up to 60% of permitted spending by candidates themselves. Individual campaign contributions are limited to no more than $4,575 Canadian, $3,400 US per annum, indexed for inflation, including $1,525 Canadian in total permitted to be donated to political parties, up to another $1,525 Canadian to candidates, and another $1,525 Canadian to candidates should an intra-party leadership contest occur. Donors of more than $200 Canadian must be identified by name. Donors of more than $200 Canadian to independent outside entities must also appear on all ensuing political advertising. Wealthy candidates are limited to just $5,000 Canadian in contributions to their own campaigns. Independent political spending by outside entities is also strictly limited. If George Soros and the Koch brothers were Canadians, they would have been limited to donations or spending in 2015 of slightly more than $208,200 Canadian, $155,000 US. Note that these caps apply for the usual 37-day campaign. They were adjusted upward proportionally in 2015 because the general election ran 78 days. Perhaps Canada's largest remaining loophole is that huge donations are still permitted to foundations or universities favored by politicians. Such donations can obviously curry favor. Donors to independent entities must be publicly identified. Moreover, the definition of political spending and donations subject to these rules utilized by Elections Canada, the federal election supervisor, is encompassing. It covers any political spending involving the transmission to the public by any means during any election period of an advertising message that promotes or opposes a registered party or the election of a candidate, including one that takes a position on an issue with which a registered party or candidate is associated. Elections Canada is vigilant for attempts by wealthy political activists to use independent entities to bypass spending limits. A third party shall not circumvent or attempt to circumvent a limit set out in Section 350 in any manner, including by splitting itself into two or more third parties for the purpose of circumventing the limit, or acting in collusion with another third party so that their combined election advertising expenses exceed the limit. Section 351, Canadian Elections Act. Conservatives have pleaded with the Canadian Supreme Court to nullify these limits on independent political spending in hopes of enabling American-style PACs to flourish. Very much unlike America, however, Canadian electoral jurisprudence is nonpartisan, mirroring that of nearly all other higher-quality democracies, and has consistently affirmed support of independent spending limits. The court's logic is explained in the landmark ruling Harper v. Canada, 2004. Unlimited third-party advertising can undermine election fairness in several ways. First, it can lead to dominance of political discourse by the wealthy. Second, it may allow political parties and candidates to circumvent their own spending limits through the creation of third parties. Third, unlimited third-party spending can have an unfair effect on the outcome of an election. Fourth, the absence of limits on third-party advertising expenses can erode the confidence of the Canadian electorate, who perceive the electoral process as being dominated by the wealthy. Western Europe. As in Canada and the UK, electioneering spending limits are commonplace in the wealthy democracies of Europe. Total spending by all Swiss political parties in the run-up to the 2011 general election was 44 million Swiss francs, $50 million, for instance. In France, each political party in the 2017 presidential campaign was capped at 16.8 million euro, $18 million, and another 22.5 million euro, $24 million, for the binary runoff. Political party spending is limited in Italy by law to 96 million euro, $105 million, funded with a blend of private donations and public subsidies, tied per capita to votes and donations received. In Germany, as noted, caps held the re-election campaign spending of German Chancellor Angela Merkel in 2013 to $27 million. German spending by legislative candidates is also capped. For example, total nationwide electioneering spending by Merkel's entire Christian Democratic Union slate 4 years earlier, involving campaigns for 598 parliament races, 6 state legislatures, and numerous regional and municipal elections, was $112 million. That is not much more than the $93 million that Sheldon Adelson alone spent in 2012, and less than one-sixth of the $750 million spent over the 2016 election cycle by the Koch political behemoth. Caps on independent spending mean that American-style purchased speech is either non-existent or quite limited in Europe, Canada, and Britain. Candidates inform voters utilizing free or inexpensive TV advertising, supplemented by print, social media, canvassing, leaflets, and billboards. Campaign lengths are limited, reaching 60 days in France, up to 78 days in Canada, up to 35 days in Australia, and 6 weeks in Germany. And elections are typically conducted on Sundays to make voting convenient for workers. Voter registration is automated. The election processes in superior democracies offer lessons for improving the quality of American democracy. The first step is an end to pay-to-play, and that step depends on the Supreme Court. As American politics unfolded after 2016 with the appointment of Judge Gorsuch, the Buckley era seems likely to persist for some years. In the future, recriminalizing vote buying hinges on a reconstituted Supreme Court willing to reassert originalism, hewing to the framers' intent to prevent corruption. That reassertion must rest on a clear understanding of the various rationales justifying an end to the Buckley era, examined in the next chapter.